Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
And we're alive.
I think he meant the physical button, right?
He's got, what do you got, a streak deck?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're live. After a record-setting week at the Bitcoin 2025 conference, I'm completely exhausted. Saturday morning rip. Thank you. Thank you all for joining us on a Saturday morning. It was conducive with the schedule with the conference week.
Marty, considering all your traveling, I'm impressed. Thank you for your service to continuing the RHR streak.
The show must go on. We've got to continue ripping. And it was a big week. There's a lot to talk about.
I got to say, I don't think the top is in, but if it was, I'm just going to be pretty proud of ourselves that the episode, last episode, was titled "Stay Humble, Stack Sats." We got that going for us.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start. Yeah. Go on.
You go ahead. I mean, the conferences always get pushed back, but I thought it was genuinely awesome. Obviously, there's grifters among people at the conference, but it is what it is.
I don't. Maybe a little bit of. The price action is conference disappointment, like people thinking, you know, like a buy the rumor, sell the news on potential announcements. But I think most of it is most of the price action is macro related stuff. It's just like markets are in a really confusing period right now.
Yeah, you have Trump, like another flip flop on tariffs when he put a 50% tariff on steel.
Yeah, I think that, and like Elon leaving and then basically saying that Doge is a failure, and then now we need to grow the economy instead of cut spending, and people like looking into this big, beautiful bill and seeing all the spending that's happening. And I think there's just a lot of macro market uncertainty, and it's spilling over into Bitcoin because Bitcoin is becoming a proper macro asset now, right? It's a proper macro thermometer on the vibes of the world's economy.
It really is. Just
kind of minor volatility.
Yeah, I mean, she's been saying it for years, but I thought Lynn's presentation at the conference really highlighted that we are definitely living in a brave new world in terms of the relationship between interest rates and the debt. We've reached escape velocity. There is no going back. Turn it on turbo, as Elon would say.
This was an interesting event for me because I was watching it from afar instead of being there. So I was basically on YouTube at 2x watching all the talks. And I have to say, I mean, first of all, I watched way more talks than I usually do because I wasn't getting pulled in a million different directions. But Lynn's talk was great. The timing of where they put her was poor because everyone was really excited for Mallers and Saylor and Ross. And then she gave like an economics lesson, like a college course. And people were like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, I don't want to look at these charts. I don't really care about inflation. Just like bring the heavy hitters up. It was her first right before them. So I think she got a little bit, I think people didn't really appreciate it just because of the timing of the talk. But if you haven't watched it, go back and watch it. I wanted to start with the thing that I couldn't see from afar, which was, how was your Hot Style Takeover pub key event?
That was a lot of fun. I mean, shout out to Germano and Greg from Pub Key, and Jerk from Pub Key. I can't take much credit for the programming. I helped a little bit, but they really went all out. It exceeded my expectations, and I think everybody's expectations that attended. It was a very well-produced variety show. It was hilarious.
Was it recorded?
Yeah. I was talking to Germano yesterday, so they're going to cut it up into sections and start leaking it out, dripping it out over the coming weeks. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Shout out to you know this, and everybody, I should mention off the bat that many of the freaks that were in attendance were asking for you. And I had to tell them not this year, next year. But that's my favorite part of these events, is meeting all the freaks in person. And
I don't know.
Freak Nation, I mean,
it's a long time away, but I don't know if I'm going next year.
April. It's April next year. I'm very happy.
I know. Fuck Vegas.
It was like I mentioned, it was my first time there.
I was pretty. I understand why they did it, but I was pretty disappointed that they chose to do Vegas again next year. I get it, but
you don't have to sign like bulk deals.
No, it's. I mean, first of all, it's always easier to do the same venue year after year, right? Think about all the moving pieces to throw an event of this size. And then the second piece is, Vegas has a massive international airport. They have massive infrastructure. The fact that people could stay in the same hotel that the venue was obviously a massive win. I mean, you've seen the cluster that is Miami, or even in Nashville, when you have to, like, people are like constantly like Ubering all over the place and trying. And Miami traffic was absolutely brutal. But
yeah, it was logistically convenient. Like,
how was your first Vegas experience?
It was good. I mean, I was so busy with the conference and side events and meeting with people that I think after the Hot Style Takeover event, I played some casino games for a little bit, but that was the extent of my gambling.
How much did you lose? I lost
$500 in total.
That's a Vegas win.
Yeah. I was up 200 at one point, and then just had fun. But that was the only night I actually gambled. But I was in bed the other two nights by midnight. It was so exhausting. I think I got I averaged like 30,000 steps a day while I was there.
Nice.
There's only one night I was out past. I kept Marty Jones in the cage.
I will say that I was, I love seeing the freaks in person. So the Hot Style Takeover event was, that part I felt a bit of FOMO on.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Shout out again, shout out to the PubKey guys. They put on a hell of a production.
And then I have it on the list, but I also skipped the Oslo Freedom Forum this year, and that one I actually felt a lot of FOMO for. But they did publish their entire Freedom Tech and AI track on YouTube, and the link is in the show notes. So if you haven't watched it, I encourage people to go watch it. A lot of great presentations there.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of them yet. What was your favorite?
Dude, Cali's a legend among men. There hasn't been a single Cali presentation that hasn't, you know, got me pumped up. I think if you're gonna watch a single presentation from the last week, it was Cali's presentation.
Was he talking about eCash or broader freedom tech?
You know, privacy and freedom in the digital age. Why it matters. How we win.
Yeah, a lot going on. All right, let's get to the list. We got Ross Free. You have it number one on the list. I was not there for the speech. I was on stage at noon on Thursday, or like 12:15 to 12:45, and then I literally brought my bags backstage with me and left the stage, hopped in a cab, and went to the airport. Barely made my flight. I missed this in person. Watched it on the flight. It was pretty inspirational.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a massive moment to have him speaking and free. I mean, it's the single biggest highlight of the year, him being pardoned, in my opinion. Surprisingly, like there was surprising synchronicity there in terms of, I had no idea that 10 years to the day he was in the courtroom getting charged, which I think was just completely coincidental. Like, I don't think the conference had much flexibility in which dates they could pick in terms of venue availability. But yeah, I mean, I feel like this was the moment. This was the moment of the show. It's crazy to me that, and that's why I let it off. It's crazy to me that he's such a good public speaker.
Right.
The dude spent like years in solitary confinement. I still hate public speaking. And he just seemed like a complete natural. Like, did he have notes? Like, I felt like he just was winging it up there. So, I mean, everyone should definitely, if you haven't watched that, go watch that. The link is in the show notes. But I mean, on that note, it's a good time to remind everyone that we do have 4 open source developers currently facing charges for writing privacy related software. We have the 2 Samurai developers and the 2 Tornado Cash developers, and we need to get them free as well. Legal costs are soaring. If you want to support their legal defense fund, that's p2prights.org.
Yeah, and shout out to Alex Lee, from HRF. He gave the Samurai devs a shout out on the main stage during his panel with Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, I watched that panel because obviously it was about funding open source contributors. And Hong Kim gave me a shout out. He's like, Odell posts on Nostr that he's willing to fund Knots contributors if they apply to OpenSats. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, that was the only, unfortunately, that was the only Samurai shout out I saw. There might have been some stuff on the news desk, but I didn't really, I was like skipping through the news desk.
Yeah, the way Rizzo runs that news desk is hilarious. His shock
his
jock
announcer voice.
Announcer voice is always makes me giggle. And it forces you to meet his energy too, which is like when I'm on the news desk, I talk in a way that I never do. It's just hilarious.
I mean, I saw a bunch of people like picking apart Ross's, because like Ross like mentions like Web3 and blockchains and stuff. Like the dude has been in jail for 10 years. Like his mind is just like going crazy. Like you got to give him the benefit of the doubt for a little bit. Like I think, like don't. I think it's representative of the social media rage culture. That people are like picking it apart and trying to like make him out as a bad guy. They're like, he's been bought off this, that, like, give me a fucking break. Yeah. I thought mostly it was incredibly inspiring and great to see him up there. And I'm once again, just blown away at how of a public speaker he is in front of like a stage of 10,000 people. Like, I think people don't realize that like this, like with the show, like we're in front of, you know, tens of thousands of people every week, but you don't see the people.
No.
It's completely different. Like publishing a podcast, even a live, like this show's live, right? So it's even more so, that goes in front of 50,000 people is way less intimidating than being on a stage in front of 5,000 people. And I think that stage, which is like a stage size that I've been on, but I think that stage was even bigger. My guess is it was probably around 10,000 people. You have the lights. The lights are just like just beaming down on you.
They had pretty impressive. They had a pit band this year. Like when I walked on stage, there was like a pit band playing.
Wow. Oh yeah, I watched your panel. That was great. I love the Noster shout out. I thought there were a lot of interesting points made there.
Yeah. No, I mean, we were talking behind stage. I was talking behind stage with Luke, and there's just a ton of people. I mean, a ton of people that we talked about on Archer, I believe last week or the week before, but like the deep fakes. We're just getting to a point where you're going to need to integrate this authentication.
Yeah, everything should be signed.
Yeah.
Like if... I think people are really sleeping on that simple aspect of Noster, that everything is signed by a private key and can be verified without trusting anybody, that it hasn't been changed. Like literally the only place you can make sure that RHR hasn't been changed is if you look at it on Noster, if you look at it on Primo.
Yeah. No, what we were talking about behind stage too is this like Epstein video that's about to be released. Apparently they now have the video of his jail cell when he committed suicide, and Luke and Dr. Malone are highly skeptical that it's actually real. And I mean, Dr. Malone,
you talked about it on stage.
Yeah. How do we know it's not AI generated? And that's why I brought up Simple Proof too. Like we can't go back and there's no way for us to verify that this Epstein video was not AI generated post facto, but I think moving forward using something like open timestamps to hash attestations to records
it was a good point. Yeah. It was a good point because it does help. Like at least like, oh, we've been sitting on this tape for 5 years, and at least if we faked it, we faked it 5 years ago. The where it really helps is at the end of the day, you know, people have reputations and proof of work, right? And so if someone who you trust has signed it, then you have some, you know, reasonable expectation that they're not fucking with you. And if you catch them once, then that should hurt their reputation. If you catch them multiple times, it should destroy their reputation. And that's kind of what we have going for us. But I think even if they had proof that they've had this video for 5 years, it would still be hard to take it seriously.
Yeah. Wild times. Yeah. But, I mean, there were a ton of bullish announcements at the conference as well. I think our good friend Miles gave a hell of a presentation for Block, in general, talking about all their umbrella companies and how they've been working over the years to create an integrated experience across the brands with Bitcoin to bring it mainstream. And they finally announced something we've been talking about for years on this podcast, which is Square enabling Bitcoin payments in their point of sale terminals, which is massive.
Yeah, I thought Miles' presentation was great. I mean, I think Block doesn't get a lot of credit, doesn't get enough credit for how much they've moved that company into a Bitcoin focus. And so I like that basically his topic was, here's all the things we've been doing with Bitcoin through the years. The Square point of sale, the biggest thing out of the Square point of sale wasn't an, I guess they announced the Square point of sale before his presentation, but Dorsey actually said on Noster that the plan is to enable it by default, which I think is massive. So the idea is that sometime in 2026, they're going to enable it by default for all of their Square sellers, which I believe is, I think Miles said 4 million sellers. It's hard to get an exact number. And then the default situation is the merchants will sell for dollars because they're not going to like force them into Bitcoin. But then the merchant can then opt in to keeping a portion or all of it in Bitcoin. But for instance, like I have an amazing burger place that's seed oil free. That has a Square terminal, right? It's like, I'll be able to spend Bitcoin there and they don't even have to do anything, which I think is absolutely massive. So hopefully that actually happens. I see Not Beebs in the comments, who said a very teeny zap of 808 sats, saying Block fudding sats though. I will say that the like social media gaslighting aspect is a bit frustrating. So what they did was on the Square payment terminals, they have the Bitcoin B and then it shows sats. And to me, that's just like them doing a different sat symbol. Yeah. And it's a little bit cheating, but it makes sense to me that they put the dollar amount right underneath. So like when people are like, oh, if you call sats Bitcoin, it will confuse people. First of all, they're not really calling sats Bitcoin. They just have a Bitcoin symbol there, which is the currency that's being used. And then second of all, they have the dollar amount. So like, you know that 7,000 Bitcoin isn't $10, which is a nice little UX hack. But look, if their hatred of sats is what gets them to finally add Bitcoin payments to all of their Square merchants, I'm here for it. That's a win in my book.
No, people were trying to dunk on me when I did the payment for my pin with Rockstar. And they're saying, oh, look, Marty, you're getting owned, like bending the knee to Bitcoin's that's. And I was like, no, you had the B symbol. And then my payment was like 948 sats. Like B948 is 948 sats. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, Lebanese HODL on Noster was posting old menus from before they destroyed the dollar. And it literally just had, you know, it had prices in cents without any currency symbol or anything, because everyone knew that if you had soup on the menu and it said 75 next to it, it was obviously cents. And I think that's where we're going with sats. Like the standard doesn't necessarily even need a symbol. It's expected. It's money. It's the standard of money.
Yeah, you need to know
it'll take a little time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the other big announcement before we move on, that's the thing. Like, look at us. We're talking about sats versus Bitcoins, which is annoying, which is noise compared
that
to...
That part's really annoying. Yeah. Everything else.
Yeah, which compared to, like, enabling this for merchants, again, having the ability to, I mean, by default, immediately convert to dollars, but on the back end, eventually, if you decide you want to hold Bitcoin, you can say, hey, I want to hold X percent of Bitcoin, and you can toggle that pretty easily. And then they'll have like a full banking stack on top of it, which is really cool. But I think the other shocking part of that presentation was the yield that C Equals is getting on their Lightning node, which I think you have to imagine is accurate, considering that Block is a publicly traded company and this is something they can't mismarket, but their routing node making 10% yield on their Bitcoin.
I mean, look, I think that's impressive, and their team has obviously put in a lot of work to increase their transaction fees that they're receiving on Lightning. I think Gentry's post trying to extrapolate that for like all routing nodes is quite questionable. I think if you think you're going to launch a routing node and not have 80 million Cash App users that are like routing through it and providing you massive inbound liquidity, you're going to have a bad time and you're not going to get near that amount. I think as more professional players come in, it'll also decrease across the board. But yeah, I that's clearly impressive.
Yeah. I mean, just the stats in general, 25% of payments, Bitcoin payments going through Cash App being Lightning, going over Lightning. I think you said like a 7x increase in payments year on year from 23 to 24. What else was that? I think they account for, like he said, 8% of Bitcoin transactions on any given day, which is pretty insane.
Yeah, in terms of like on-chain volume.
Yeah.
The other thing is like, in general, like I don't love, I get where you're coming, where people are coming from with it, but like I don't love the concept of calling transaction fees yield. I mean, yeah. Like if how much does Cash App make on on-chain transaction fees and dollar transaction fees? Like I think they make a decent amount of money, and they don't have to lock up any money to do it.
Yeah,
but I understand the marketing for it.
Yeah, what do you call it? Routing revenue.
I mean, it's just their transaction fees.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess the benchmark is how much Bitcoin you have locked up in the channels on the node. The percentage growth of that Bitcoin over a year. Yeah, without calling it yield, what do you call it? Transaction fees anchored as a percentage of overall liquidity locked.
Anyway, no matter how you cut it, it's impressive for their team that they've been able to accomplish that. I just caution people. It obviously extremes get the most engagement on socials, but like I caution people against extrapolating it to other routing nodes.
Yeah.
And I got into a back and forth with the guy, Tyler, who did the data on Nostr. And he said, I think I have, what I have the, let me just read exactly what he said. But he even said to the point that, C equals, which is the routing node, has a few advantages, but the main one is our proximity to a service that facilitates real payments from real people over Lightning. This proximity creates the liquidity dynamic that lets us earn routing fees from the public network. So like that was to my question of, is it fair to say that people shouldn't be extrapolating this to all routing nodes? Don't have it on the list. And I don't know if it was announced at the conference or not, but like Amboss just released like a machine learning LLM powered maximized yield tool or whatever. And like that's got to compress to zero, right? If you're using that tool, like maybe in the beginning, it's basically like they're just like deposit money and then you generate yield on Lightning. And it's like, okay, well, then a bunch of people are computing on that.
I think certainly over time in the long run, yeah. But there's definitely got to be a massive opportunity and arbitrage as the network scales and more people begin to use it. Like once you get to sufficient liquidity and size. Well, that's the other thing we talked about too, which people shouldn't forget, is that you can do more with less as the price of Bitcoin goes up as well. So these dynamics are changing as the price changes too.
And I mean, unless you're measuring in sats.
Yeah, but still, like the
stats as your unit of account.
Yeah, but the amount of
percentage wise, it shouldn't change. If you're going to go with yield percentage over Bitcoin locked up.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like how the purchasing power of each individual sat as the price goes up. Like you're sending less sats through.
You can send more dollars. Yeah. Dollars worth of value.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we wrap on the, it seems like we just like have a block of block topics. The other big thing was they hit their record, 4,001 transactions.
Well, this wasn't block
for in-person transactions. Yeah, they had like BTC Pay there as well, right?
Yeah.
But the conference hit their payment record, and I'm just bringing that up because we did cover the attempt earlier in RHR a couple weeks ago.
I was the official expert witness. I had to go back into the war room with the BTC media team, go through all the logs of each individual merchant that was on the expo floor, help them count up the transactions. And I can confirm that we did. I believe when we put the final tally in, it was 4,187 transactions were completed between 9:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. local time.
How many?
4,187, I believe.
The number I'm recalling. It was funny that Bailey tried to do the first transaction on stage and failed.
I talked to Corallo about it, who was helping, and apparently the Secret Service wouldn't let them put this like battery charger on the POS, and so it was in like offline mode. And the way NFC works is if you create an invoice and you don't pay it within like 10 seconds, like the NFC turns off, and I think that's what happened. But second attempt to do a Bitcoin transaction in front of a global audience with somebody in the executive branch, and did not go as swimmingly as possible. But I think it has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It was with the fact that they had the POS system in offline mode and the NFC crapped out after 10 seconds.
Yeah, that was awesome. But anyway, so on the block stuff, there was also a lot of drama around their narrative, specifically of Dorsey sending out a tweet saying seedless is safer. Because the bit key is seedless. I think that was really frustrating to see. Because it's just objectively not true. People have different threat models in different situations, and for some people, having a easier to use wallet like BitKey, that requires more trust and is less sovereign, protects them from making mistakes and shooting themselves in the foot. And then for other people that are more technical and or more competent, obviously being able to, in a trust minimized way, have a Bitcoin wallet, back it up, use it interoperably with many different wallets using seed phrases is far superior. I would just put out a broad speaking request that, as always, I would like people to be more honest with trade-offs. And I think in an ideal situation, Bitcoiners should have as many options as possible. But where you start to go into malicious territory is when you gloss over trade-offs and you make absolute statements that do so.
Yeah, I would agree there. I mean, the first magical experience I ever had with Bitcoin, I mean, I was in Bitcoin, I think at this point, for a couple of years, but I only ever bought on Coinbase. And moved to Electrum back in the day. The most magical experience for me was recovering from seed when I was in a foreign country and had a 12-word seed phrase on me and needed money and didn't have my computer, went to somebody else's computer, downloaded an Electrum wallet, put the seed in, Bitcoin was there, moved the Bitcoin to the exchange, sold, and had money in a foreign country. That was powerful. That was not be possible without the seed phrase and with BitKeys. If I'm traveling without a BitKey, only have the mobile app, or don't even have the mobile app, just have nothing. Like, that's not possible. I could theoretically have been traveling the world with a piece of paper and had access to that money. All I needed was somebody.
Yeah, I mean, when I travel, I assume that everything that I travel with will be confiscated or seized. And, you know, with a BitKey, I would not be comfortable at all. Like, they're just like, they take it out. They're like, have you unlock your phone, and you just tap your finger and you just fucking do it. But yeah, different threat models, different trade-offs, different uses. Like, it's good that they're experimenting with different setups. And once again, I've said in the past, you know, like, the BitKey is the first wallet that I feel comfortable giving to my dad and having him in a relatively secure setup that he's not going to mess up and not going to have to call me over and over again to get prepared. But at the same time, I do feel like new users just do not appreciate the power that seeds and the interoperability across apps that seeds provide. I mean, when I was first getting into Bitcoin, if you wanted to keep like offline cold storage backup, I like printed out paper wallets from a printer and then destroyed the fucking printer because the printer has memory. Like, that's insane. Like, with seed words that you can just write it down. I mean, ideally put it in steel, but that you can just with a pen and paper just write down 12, 24 words is just so empowering. And I feel like a lot of new people don't appreciate how much better the tooling has gotten from even like 5-8 years ago.
Yeah, not to mention, I can't gloss over the privacy trade-offs too. I mean, agree. Yeah. BitKey is the first wallet I feel comfortable giving my mom or any newcomer that isn't as technically competent or who I would worry about losing a seed phrase or a hardware wallet or both, like Dave Portnoy. Just famously, I set him up with a Trezor.
Yeah. He should have had a BitKey.
Watched him back up a seed phrase twice. And I told him, I sat him down for half an hour. I said, you can lose two of these. You can't lose all three of them. And he lost all three of them and donated a good amount of Bitcoin to the Ether. I think privacy trade-offs need to be taken into consideration too, the way the setup is with BitKey. Like, you're dependent on their server, so they know how much Bitcoin you have.
And they don't even have coin control yet. Like, if you want to move to another wallet, you have to combine everything. Once again, trade-offs. And this type of glossing over trade-offs and going to extremes and saying seedless is safer or seedless is completely unsafe, like, what it does is it creates a lot of panicked users in an environment where we need more people to take self-custody, not less. And the texts that I've received throughout this week because of the drama that was going on Twitter, which, by the way, this was one of the first times that I like really regretted deleting my X account because of how it was being handled on X. I was getting texts. I was getting texts from friends that had seed words that were panicking because Dorsey said seedless was safer. I had texts from people that were using BitKey that were panicking because people were saying that BitKey was completely unsafe. And like, what happens to these people? These people end up selling their Bitcoin, opening up their Charles Schwab app, and then just buying the ETF. Like, that's what's happening in practice. So Yeah, tell the people out there listening. I know we have a lot of people in the industry that listen to this show. Just like, nuance is important, context is important. Everyone has different threat models. Be honest with trade-offs. Like, just this shit matters. Like, people's savings are on the line. This is the life savings are on the line. Their livelihoods. Treat it with more responsibility than a shit post.
I know the Becky team pretty well now at this point too. And I like those guys a lot, but I do worry with the one marketing term, like burn your seed phrase. Like, there has to be the number of people out there who are going to take that literally has to be above zero. And you're going to, like, how many people are, like, going to go burn their seed phrase because of the marketing campaign, not understanding what they're doing?
I will say that they launched maybe 3 weeks ago or something, their shiny new point of sale system with the QRs, with the barcode scanner and the nice big touchscreen and stuff. Like, they should come out with like a BitKey Pro. Like, I think it mitigates a lot of the concerns that a lot of people have, and give people an upgrade path where they can go from the screenless BitKey to, you know, a full screen device. I think would be a major improvement. And give people like a path to more secure custody over time. And I will say, like you said, a lot of I met a lot of the guys that are behind the BitKey project, and you know, they seem to very, very much care. They think about these problems a lot. And there's no doubt in my mind that they want to do good for self-custody usage. But I think there were a decent amount of mistakes made in terms of messaging and what was handled after that.
Yeah. And again, for anybody who's not heard us describe this, I mean, a BitKey setup is significantly better than just holding your ETF, worst thing, just holding your Bitcoin on an exchange, second worst. BitKey is, it was reset up. Like, it's, you have some sovereignty, but you are dependent to a certain degree on Square or Block's servers. And then obviously Bitcoin in a wallet that you set up, you create the private public key, you backed it up, is the most sovereign.
Proper cold storage. Proper cold storage. Like, I would never keep my life savings on a BitKey.
Yeah.
You want it to be offline. You want to generate the keys offline. You want to be able to verify what's going on. You want to be able to have a secure screen that you can approve transactions on, whether that's receiving or sending. Like, the lack of screen is a big one for me on BitKey. But yeah, enough with that. But my point is, just industry players should be better, and I want users to not panic too much. Take a deep breath. Self-custody is accessible. You can figure it out. Dip your toe in. Buy real Bitcoin. Hold real Bitcoin. Don't buy Bitcoin exposure. It's incredibly empowering. It's a superpower.
It really is. Bitcoin exposure, so hot right now. Buy the real thing. That's what we recommend here.
Stay humble, stack sets.
Speaking of which, moving down the list, a lot of big announcements. Pakistan announced their strategic reserve. Not one of the countries I expected to step into the fray, for being honest.
Is India next?
Big gold country. They love gold there. We've been talking about that for years, you know. It aligns with their culture of liking sovereign hard money, so would not be surprised.
It was a pretty funny announcement because there was zero specifics whatsoever, but The one specific they did do is on the energy side in terms of mining. I forget the exact amount, but they seem to be leaning into that in a big way. And he like called for miners to move to Pakistan. It's like, out of all the jurisdictions, like, probably not the best idea, but
I'm not going to rush over there, I'll tell you that. But I do like that.
I respect the hustle.
Yeah. So the nation state adoption continues to increase. corporate adoption seems to increase. I think one of the coolest corporate adopters that was announced at the conference was Paris Saint-Germain, PSG, one of the biggest soccer clubs in the world. I actually met that guy. That guy was on stage like two before us. It was him, then Paolo, and then me, Dr. Malone, and Luke Radosky. So I was able to shake his hand behind stage. So I watched his announcement from backstage. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's a massive, whether we like it, I mean, I do like it. Like, sports are one of the biggest parts of culture globally. And as we know, people in Europe love their European football. And one of the biggest, yeah, most clubs announcing is pretty massive.
Yeah, I mean, so he announced that they bought Bitcoin last year and they still hold it and they're accumulating more. The other interesting thing he announced was that they're launching an incubator to build businesses, which is Bitcoin businesses, which is cool. Very forward leaning, makes, you know, not the hugest announcement in the world, but also not a non-announcement. Like, that's it's pretty interesting.
I mean, they had one of the best footballers of all time, Thierry Henry, as a PSG player. You know,
they're one of the best teams in the world.
Prestigious brand awareness. So that was cool to see. What else do we have? Mayor Adams. I didn't hear his whole speech. I just heard the headlines on the
Bitcoin. I did. What were your thoughts? So first of all, like, he can go fuck himself. Like, I don't trust him for shit. But as an ex-New Yorker and as someone who was there in 2013 during the BitLicense hearings, it was good to hear him shit on the BitLicense. I mean, New York had one of the best Bitcoin communities in the world. It was one of the Bitcoin capitals of the world. Like, literally all the local government had to do was absolutely nothing. And they torched it all with the BitLicense. And specifically Ben Lawsky, who championed the BitLicense, passed it, then launched his own consulting firm to help companies get through it and have him collect fees, and then joined the Ripple board, and now is at NYDIG, and just did the whole thing all for personal gain, can truly go fuck himself. So it was good to see rhetoric against the BitLicense and an understanding that cities like Nashville and Austin have punched above their weight and taken a lot of industry and growth from New York. Was good to see. And then he also announced that he wants to launch BitBonds. And I will say that that is also one of the, that, so the BitLicense part to me was surprising and good to see. Probably too little too late. He can actually revoke the BitLicense, a state regulation. So I wouldn't hold your breath on that. My advice to New Yorkers is to move to better pastures. It continues to be. Yeah, go on.
As it pertains to the BitLicense, what I'm hearing is that a lot of Bitcoiners in New York want to back Richie Torres because he has expressed intent to work to abolish the BitLicense if elected. And I will acknowledge Thierry Henry did not ever play for PSG. I'm getting called out in the comments. I'm not a European football fan, so that's on me.
Well, I didn't correct you, so I'll take some blame too. He played for NYCFC though. No, he played for Red Bulls. Anyway, on the BitBonds thing, it actually makes complete sense because BitBonds are the best for failed states. Because, like, who wants to lend New York City money without Bitcoin exposure? Like, of course. Of course you want to juice up some NYC debt with the best performing asset of all time. That just lines up. And I think, I mean, I don't pretend to understand city politics, but I think that that's, like, the city can issue its own bonds and can set them up how they want to set them up. So that's actually within his capabilities.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a signal that New York's moving in the right direction, right? And
as somebody wants to help you.
Yeah, we'll see. It would be cool though. Look, if they actually do go issue one, that would be a massive validation of the idea. We'd get a smaller, relatively smaller scale experimental play sandbox before anything gets talked about at the at the federal. And on that note, I met David Sachs. I was walking into the Venetian. I stayed at the Wynn, and I forget, it was Wednesday morning. I was walking into the conference, and David Sachs was outside, security waiting for a car. I took the opportunity to sort of be like, "Hey, what's up, dude?" And floated Bitbonds to him. And he was under the impression that they wouldn't be able to issue debt to buy Bitcoin. So he's under the impression that Bitbonds may not be the way.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to lose that bet. But New York City will probably rise again. I just think it will take a lot of time, like in decades. Like, I think people holding the New York City bags is probably going to age pretty poorly. But we'll see. One last thing on that note, though. I do think he deserves a bit of credit, Eric Adams, as a Democrat of the largest Democrat city in the country, flying to Vegas for a Bitcoin conference when many in the Democratic establishment believe that Bitcoin is kind of like a Republican thing. So it was cool to see party lines cross there.
Yeah. It really was. The moving on, we've got a long one.
Before we move on, where do I have my bets? What's our bet? It's
you gave me 4-1. It's 11:59, December 31st of this year.
The U.S. federal government will issue bit bonds by the end of 2025.
Yeah.
You got 2-1 odds. Yeah. And away slices in the bet too. I bet both of you. 100,000 sats each.
I bet both of you. I think I owe both of you money.
Oh yeah, you're right. You bet both of us.
Yeah. I'll wait till December 31st, but I'm now under the impression I'm going to be paying both of you out on January 1st, 2020. So.
I look forward to posting my chart of my quote unquote bets yield this year. I think this is going to be a good year for me.
Speaking of yield, I'm trying to use a segue. It's not a great segue. Not a segue at all. Completely different topic, but Michael Saylor thudding proof of reserves when asked at the Bitcoin for Corporations Day, Lee Mitchell. I'm not sure if he's with Blockware anymore. Where's Mitchell with? Let me check here. But regardless, Mitchell Hoddle got up. He is with the Blockware team still. Asked the question about proof of reserves, and Saylor responded. He gave a long response, but the gist of it is that reserves are not smart because it creates and introduces security risk for the company, the shareholders, the board of directors, all that.
He said it was insecure. He said it was insecure. He did like one of his usual, you know, like 7-minute non-answers, and then told people to search, just go to ChatGPT and type and do like deep search and ask it why proof of reserves is insecure. Look, I mean, obviously, if you tell people how much Bitcoin you have, it adds an additional security risk. People shouldn't tell each other how much Bitcoin they have. Now, if you're running a publicly traded company that the entire basis is how much Bitcoin you have and you publicly state how much Bitcoin you have, proving those reserves doesn't add additional security risks there. Everyone that's high up in MicroStrategy and Fidelity and Anchorage and Coinbase have massive, massive security concerns, regardless of proof of reserves. Like these companies, like proof of reserves should be the standard. Now, I do not think the right way. If you're a shareholder of one of these companies that's not doing proof of reserves, there should be concern. I think there should be significant concern. I think it's disappointing that out of all the ETFs, I believe Bitwise is still the only one doing proof of reserves. I think the way that this gets handled in the market, though, is through competition, right? El Salvador does proof of reserves. Metaplanet does proof of reserves. Obviously, I don't think you can, like, you obviously can't buy stock in El Salvador, but you could buy Metaplanet instead of MSTR. And then Mallers also announced that XXI will be doing proof of reserves over this next week. And despite speculation, like, that was not a response to Sailor's FUD on proof of reserves. Like, that was a planned announcement. Sailor just happened to kind of set him up. But I think it becomes the standard over time, and I think that happens because of competition, rather than people complaining and or begging for it. I think the market will hopefully value it and realize that it should be the standard, because that's one of the advantages we have over something like gold, is that you can easily prove ownership of funds without putting them at risk in a trustless way.
Yeah, sorry. Looks like my family came back into the house and once. I think I got kicked off.
They all joined the Wi-Fi at the same time.
Yeah. Am I assuming correctly that you just made the point that he's saying it's insecure because you have to touch your keys every once in a while to basically sign a message that proves?
I mean, he didn't make it clear. He told us to just search ChatGPT. Like, I think if you're a shareholder, like, it should be, you should be questioning it. To be clear here, I think they probably have the Bitcoin they say they have. Like, I don't think he's lying. But I think it's disappointing, discouraging proof of reserves. And I think competition will sort this out. And I think the market will appreciate those that actually do use the power of Bitcoin to prove they have reserves. And I would just say, like, yes, there was an argument made that, like, without proving liabilities, proof of reserves is incomplete. Yeah, sure, fine. That's absolutely true. And specifically dollar-based liabilities, you know, you can't prove them like you can with Bitcoin, right? You don't have cryptographic verifiable proof. That is true as well. But then once again, FTX had no Bitcoin. You know, if you have, there are levels to these things, right? And to your point about touching keys and signing all the time, like, even if it's, you know, once a year we have around 500,000 Bitcoin that we've proved, I think goes a long way. Like, I think perfect is the enemy of good here. And I think there's a lot of advantages that could be done. And I think it also helps, particularly if you're using a professional custodian, one of these, like, big three custodians, like AnchorWatch, Fidelity, Coinbase, it helps keep them honest too, because it's not just you. You know, you want all the large holders that are in Coinbase or in Fidelity or in Anchorage to be doing individual proof of reserves as well, because it discourages them from playing games.
Yeah, and I think this actually, if you're worried about proof of reserves being insecure because you need to touch keys, I think that just makes a stronger case for, like, multi-institution, multi-sig reserves, where you have sort of risk tolerance build up with the quorum. And, I mean, we didn't mention it last week, but on that note, like, Unchained officially released or launched their trust company, Gannett Trust, which is a qualified custodian. And so you now have a multi-institution, multi-sig trust company that could do something like this. I think that's where it should go. So just trusting Coinbase and their MCP or MPC setup, excuse me. Do multi-sig.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love multi-institutional, multi-sig. I think that's the direction we're going in. I think it's going to take some time. I mean, multi-sig in general is just great for organizations. We have Pauly zapped us 21,000 sats in the Nostr live chat at rhr.tv/stream. Thank you, Pauly. I see Craig is mentioning in the YouTube chat, when you sign a message, are addresses exposed to a quantum risk because they're not hashed? Yes, they can be a bit more vulnerable in that situation. Now, there's two ways you can handle this. First of all, you can sign a message and then send it to a new address without the public key being exposed. Second of all, I think even just posting addresses without signing them cryptographically is a massive win. Like, here are our addresses. You know, like, the Bitcoin is held here, and just like fucking tweeting it out, not even a fucking signed message, putting it in public filings, is a massive, massive step in the right direction. So like, I feel like there's a lot of gaslighting here, but also, once again, like, I think, the right way to handle this is not to complain, but to compete. And I think there's a lot of competitors that realize this, and, I expect market pressures to push people in this direction anyway. Nice. We lost Marty again. What else do we have? Vice President Vance spoke. I actually thought it, for a politician, was a pretty solid speech. And it was just cool to see that he shout out our friends at Bitcoin Policy Institute. I think that was a big deal for them. So huge shout to Grant McCarty, David Zell, Matt Pines, and the rest of the team over there, Stephen Pollack. I think it was a big validation of a lot of the work they've done. You want to play the clip while we're waiting for him, Logan? The one Pines posted. Don't worry, Marty. I have the show under control. We're playing the Vance BPI shout-out clip.
The way that Bitcoin
coming from my phone
is involved in the strategic future of our country, that's got to be a two-way conversation. And so when I talk about getting involved in politics, one of the things that you guys got to do is continue to give us feedback and continue to tell us the ways in which Bitcoin can play a positive role in the strategic future of this country. I know the Bitcoin Policy Institute is working on this very topic now, but all of you have got to be involved in this conversation, because I don't think any of us want to wake up in a country 10 years from now that is less wealthy and less prosperous because we made bad decisions today. We're going to make the right decisions, but that depends on you guys being part of the conversation. So be part of that conversation.
Just really cool to see. Yeah, I mean, just the work that Bitcoin Policy Institute has been doing has been fantastic. So I'm really appreciative of those teams. Obviously, disclosure, I think all the freaks know, but now that Marty is running clickbait headlines on YouTube, we probably have a lot of new people listening based on last week's numbers. I am one of the founding three board members of Bitcoin Policy Institute. I'm not shouting out myself because I basically just approve their salaries. They do all the work. It's super impressive.
And they're absolutely crushing it. They're really crushing it. They showed up in full force this week in Vegas.
And I do not get paid for Bitcoin Policy Institute. The other thing I have on the list is Trace Mayer. I'm grateful for Trace helping me with his content in my early Bitcoin journey. But in 2020, he took over the Twitter Bitcoin account, was very anti-Bitcoin privacy tools, then proceeded to shill a absolute dog shit Mimblewimble privacy shit coin, and then proceeded to stop doing public appearances. And a lot of people said that he was doing it to disappear for OPSEC reasons. And now he's back on main stage, like in front of like millions and millions of people. So this is less about Trace and more just about all those people out there that are still listening that were reply guying me throughout the years saying he was doing it to disappear, you're wrong. I feel like it's worth noting.
I walked past Trace in the Venetian at one point. Didn't say hi to him, but I saw he did something with Caitlin Long. I didn't see anything on stage. Was he?
So he headlined the Bitcoin Bugle event, the Bitcoin Bugle side event with Caitlin. And then he also was on the main stage at one point. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not much to say there. The
look, I mean you can disappear without shilling a shitcoin. Literally all you have to do is delete your Twitter account. You can still pretty much post on Nostr and most people won't even realize you still exist. So it works. Like, you don't have to shill a shitcoin to disappear, and that's not why he shilled it. And there's clear proof now, so important to mention.
More important to mention, I watched this presentation while I was on my flight back to Austin from Jack Mahler's. Pretty massive. I know you've been working closely with Jack and the team, and I think we've been sort of choreographing this on this show for the last 2 weeks, but it's great to see the announcement. I really think the setup to is explaining why a Bitcoin lending product exists was pretty massive. Like, this is a tool that has been leveraged by people that own very valuable assets for literal centuries, and it makes sense that Bitcoiners should have access to similar tools, considering the trajectory of how economies have grown over many centuries, and access to collateralized lending products has really enabled people to tap into their wealth and do predictive things with it. And I think getting the yields below double digits, making it clear there's no rehypothecation, and really getting the ball rolling and bringing more sensible cost of capital to the markets for Bitcoin collateralized lending is massive.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mahler's presentation was great. You know, I've been working very closely with him and his team. And look, at the end of the day, these products are going to exist. All the banks are going to offer them. Charles Schwab and all the brokers are going to offer it against IBIT and stuff. I think it's incredibly important that we have a responsible, deliberate product offering that allows people to use Bitcoin as collateral and take loans. I really appreciated that he was very deliberate about asking people not to overleverage themselves, right? Strike has no idea how big your Bitcoin stack is. But the ideal situation should be, you know, it's got to be like less than 5% of your stack, so that if Bitcoin price does go down, you're able to cover yourself and that you're not overleveraged. I think it's incredibly empowering that you don't need a credit check. You don't have to interact with traditional banks, that you're able to easily use self-custody Bitcoin to do this and then immediately take self-custody Bitcoin back out when you close the loan. I think these things are incredibly empowering to people. The goal is to offer this globally. Out of everyone's concerns that since the launch of the product, pretty much everything has been covered. The minimums have been reduced to make them more accessible to people. I believe the minimums now are $10,000 worth of Bitcoin. Or maybe it's a $10,000 loan. Right? It's over-collateralized, right? And that over-collateralization, by the way, people are like, oh, why am I only getting 50% of the dollars that I put in terms of Bitcoin? That's what enables this without credit checks and the invasive procedures that involves, because it's over collateralized, because as a lender, you know that if they default on their loan, then you're able to sell Bitcoin and recoup your costs. Rates have been lowered. At the highest tiers, they're lower than HELOCs, right? A HELOC is taking equity out on your home. And the goal is to expand it out to as many jurisdictions as possible, just basically whack-a-mole, iterating over time, adding jurisdictions. The last piece is proof of reserves. We wanted to announce that at the conference, but it just wasn't ready, and it wasn't worth rushing a incomplete product that was probably more virtue signaling than anything. So it's a priority. There'll be proof of reserve shortly. If the product doesn't make sense to you, don't use it. And once again, I think it's important for Bitcoiners to have as many tools as possible available to them. The trade-offs need to be very obvious and very clear.
Yeah, and as it pertains to the loan-to-value ratio, again, building on the point of you should only use a very small percentage of your stack, like, yeah, it can be annoying to think I need to put up $200,000 worth of Bitcoin to get a $100,000 loan, but considering where margin calls are, it should actually be viewed as like a forced sort of risk management system where it actually works in your benefit if the volatility is to the downside.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is we don't want to see people liquidated. Like, you don't want to see people liquidated, so you make the over collateralization requirement higher than it's not like a legal requirement. Like, you can make the LTV you can make that over collateralization way less legally speaking, but then more people would get liquidated. So it's a balancing act. But yeah, single digit rates, very easy UX flow. It's very obvious an app if you test it out. Both me and Jack are users of the product. We've tested it extensively. It's very clear where the margin calls is. It's very clear where the liquidation levels are. It's very clear how healthy your loan is. To the cent, it says, you know, Bitcoin falls to this point, you have to put more Bitcoin in. You can add Bitcoin or dollars at any point to over collateralize even more. And because Strike is becoming like this centralized, regulated KYC translation layer between the dollar system and the Bitcoin system, it gives you all of those abilities on top of the loan, right? So you can easily buy Bitcoin to self-custody. 90% of Bitcoin bought on Strike goes to self-custody. You can easily sell Bitcoin to your bank account. You can, in 10 minutes, like, basically instantly have dollars in your bank account, whether you're selling or you're doing debt. You can pay your bills using Bill Pay. It's becoming incredibly powerful. And as someone who is raising a growing family along with my wife on a full Bitcoin standard and can't spend Bitcoin on my mortgage and other necessary expenses, it's really become incredibly useful. Last but not least, obviously we have Lightning deposits, which are fantastic from a privacy perspective. People should leverage those. So just trying to iterate and build the best product possible and expand it globally.
Yeah, as somebody who's used the Lending product already, it is pretty insane how seamless it is and how quickly you can get that money in your bank account. I've got to run here soon, but we do have, it's not the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, but is very much in line. I wouldn't be surprised the Human Rights Foundation is writing about this. We have stuff going on in Serbia, and Bitcoin is being used as a way to fight back against regime oppression. And so this is coming from the Faculty of Dramatic Arts, FDU, within Serbia. Bitcoin donations are intended for the students and staff of the Faculty of Dramatic Arts who are affected by the regime's repression and who have stood together in resistance for over 6 months, maintaining a faculty blockade as an act of protest and solidarity. It all began on November 22nd, 2024, when students were physically attacked, sparking a wave of protests and demands for justice, transparency, and protection of university autonomy. Instead of addressing these demands, the regime has responded with pressure, intimidation, and withdrawal of resources, professors, and staff, despite not receiving their full salaries for 4 months, continues to stand side by side with the students in the fight for dignified education in a free society. Donations support those who invest in time, knowledge, and energy in this struggle, despite personal and institutional hardship, until the demands are met. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. What's
happening? I mean, so there's been ongoing protests for a few months now, maybe longer. And a lot of them are student-led. And this specific student group has leaned into Primal and Noster in a big way, which is awesome to see. And it showcases the power of the two technologies combined, right? So they can post without permission. We can verify it's them. We can verify the integrity of the messages. And then we can easily donate. I mean, if you see in that screenshot that he showed or that live view on Primal, I just, in like two clicks, like sent them up over 100,000 sats, right? And I think that's incredibly empowering. It's good to see it being used in practice. And I don't know if I can, I don't want to dox her, but it was a good friend that onboarded them to Noster. And that's what it takes, just one by one, you know, it's like easy. It's not easy, it's a grind. But one by one, we can help empower people by trying to help and showing them the tools and help educating them and making the tools easier than ever. I know you need to wrap, but the last piece that I think we should cover is something that you actually brought to my attention, but is the least surprising news ever, which is that Trump is tapping Palantir to build a dystopian AI-powered database on all Americans. Yeah, like I said, people shouldn't be surprised about this. This is exactly where this country is going, and is one of the scariest parts about AI-related technologies, which is the single best thing that they're capable of doing right now is crawling large data sets and making them more useful, which is ideal in a surveillance and control situation. This new tech elite that has been growing, whether it's Sachs or Thiel or Elon or Palmer Luckey, who do seem patriotic, but also seem like they're very, very focused on this dystopian surveillance, centralized control system that is being put in place.
It's funny, like I've talked about it. Like I went to the Thiel lectures at UATX last month or a couple months ago now at this point. And, I mean, during those lectures, he was like incredibly worried about surveillance AI. So it's weird. And who knows? I had a bunch of people replying to my tweet and my note from last night that don't believe the MIT propaganda if you actually like dig deep into the details. It's some like hand wavy thing, but I would not be surprised. And when it comes to Palantir, I think like Alex Karp speaks too flippantly about murdering people using his technology, which is something that people should not speak flippantly about. I think if you're building and harnessing a technology that does something like that, the degree of seriousness with which you bring the subject should be incredibly high. And he just speaks very flippantly about it, which means that the signals to me may not be psychologically in a state of mind that you would want somebody with access to that technology. But yeah. And if you think about it, there's like a database of all Americans. Like, what is that top of funnel to? Digital ID. Okay.
Yeah.
We said it where Trump even was elected, like, pay attention to the border and the immigration. Like, some of the signal there is like forced digital ID.
I mean, look, anyone who's gone through customs, you see the cameras, you see the fingerprints, track control. And look, this is a bipartisan thing. Pretty much all politicians agree on just collecting massive amount of data on American citizens and the rest of the world. to be clear, and using it to control. And it obviously can be abused very easily. And obviously it can be leaked. It should be assumed that eventually these things will be compromised or represent national security issues. And I think, as Adam Back has eloquently said in the past, the answer is twofold, right? I think the most actionable answer is building tools that route around it and empower individuals. That's something that's very much in our control. And that's why I titled this episode, Freedom Tech is Hope. But then the second piece is, you know, there needs to be policy initiatives in terms of tapping into that political greed calculation and making it advantageous for politicians to stand up to it. And there are a few that do. And hopefully there will be more that realize this is a massive national security issue. It violates our constitutional rights. It's just ethically and morally wrong. Just hurts honest people. It hurts every one of us, not just Americans, globally.
Yeah. Be aware. Yeah. The Great Reset may still be underway, just in a different form factor. Freaks, be aware.
Yeah. Always has been. Yeah. Mandibles and big standard.
We do have two boosts to read, and they are timely. So I want to make sure we get to them. And they're from our good friend. Haven't heard from him in a while. Come Rocket. Come Rocket. Wrong one, Logan. Good try.
Come Rocket.
I can't even hear it right now.
I like the one you chose.
The second one was right. That's the that's like the out of the box roadcaster, like rock and roll.
I gotta put these on the stream deck so I don't have the opportunity to make that mistake.
Come Rocket, 21,420 sats. OC Bitcoiners meet up Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Burger Lounge on 8553 Irvine Center Drive in Irvine, California. Join us at OC Bitcoiners for an in-depth exploration into the world of Bitcoin, dive into the fundamentals of Bitcoin, learn about all things Bitcoin, and discover the secrets of cryptography that powered this financial revolution. From understanding the importance of saving money through Bitcoin to the deep philosophical aspects of Bitcoin, this event is perfect for both newcomers and seasoned enthusiasts. We are excited to continue the conversation around the evolving landscape of money. This meetup will help guide you through the complexities of understanding to mastering the network. Again, that's Tuesday, June 3rd. So next Tuesday, 6:30 to 8:30, Burger Lounge, 8553 Irvine Center Drive in Irvine, California. And then the second boost and last boost of the week is also from Come Rocket. He wants to let you know that there's a boost starter, Odell's Node Down? Also, free kids' meals every Tuesday with the purchase of an adult entree at the mentioned Burger Lounge. Be willing. Stay humble, stack sats. Peace of love.
God damn it. Maybe I'll check. It could just be a liquidity issue because I practice self-custody.
Yeah.
Thank you for trying, Come Rocket. I appreciate that. SoapMiner zapped us 21,000 sats as well on the Master Live stream. Thank you, SoapMiner. Best soap in the business. Not that I'm a soap expert, but I like the soap and it seems healthy and natural. Funny story before we wrap. Wife has beef tallow moisturizer, and she put it on her legs when we were going to bed the other night, and all of a sudden our husky just like walks in, just sniffing all over the place, and just like gets up on bed and just like, what's going on here on the legs? What's going on? I just thought that was fucking hilarious. We like thought something was wrong. I like didn't know. We didn't put two and two together at first, but it was clearly the beef tallow moisturizer.
Smells the beef. Also, before we wrap, Bitcoin John here in Philadelphia Monday night. It's going down. They were on the fence of whether or not they were gonna have a John this month. The John is on. I will be there. So if you're in Philly, get to the John.
Love it. Wonderful. Great rip. Enjoy your fam. Enjoy the weekend. Stay humble, stack sets.
You too, sir. Peace and love.